Productions. Recorded live.
Yeah, there's lots of podcasts out there, but they all talk about the same thing, the same way, over and over and over and over again. Are you tired of the normal podcast? Are you tired of the same old thing? Then step out of the normal zone and step into the Roni Zone. Roni Zone Radio is a place where we look at all kinds of different things, from God to Star Wars and everything, and I mean everything in between. We look at it from a lot of different angles, different points of view that discuss things you maybe never thought about before. So get rid of the normal shows. Get rid of the normal podcast and step into the Roni Zone. Roni Zone Radio, a very, very, very different podcast. Roni Zone Radio is available at jrdonline.com.
Hey, everybody, this is Jeff Roni, and you are in the Roni Zone. And I hope Barry's okay.
I'm okay.
I heard crashing.
Yeah, I was closing a door, and everything fell over.
Well, hang in there. So tonight we're going to catch up with a friend of mine from college, and he still admits to knowing me today. So that's a rare thing, and I brought him on the show to talk about him and where he's been, where he's going, and some important things to him. So I just want to thank him for being on the show. And welcome in. Hey, Barry.
Hey, Jeff. Good to be here.
Absolutely. Whoa. Hang in there. Boy, you got things going on at the house.
It'll be done in a moment. I have to put some water in the fish tank because it's making these sounds, you know, the pump.
Yes.
It's making all these crazy sounds, and I'm trying to eliminate all those crazy sounds while I'm on your show.
This is the first.
There we go. Pouring the water in the fish tank. And done. There. I finally eliminated all those sounds. We're all set to go.
I'm glad you care about the fish so much. That's important.
Oh, now I can sit down and relax and enjoy the show.
All right. Have a seat. Get yourself a cocoa or whatever. Whatever you got. All right, so Barry Vondran, Mr. Barry Vondran, I need to tell you this right up front. I should probably pay you some money because I've been telling stories about you probably since college.
You're kidding. Okay.
No, I probably need to, you know, send you like $20 or something. Cause
well, hey, I'll it's all welcome.
See, no, but Barry, you are a very interesting character. You've done a lot of things. You have a varied group of interests in your life. And I just want to start, where did you grow up? Where was little Barry born and where did he grow up?
Ah, boy, those are some boring things. But I was born in West. I was born in Webster. Hello?
Yes?
I was born in Webster, South Dakota.
Okay.
And grew up in Minneapolis. And then I went to college in California, and that's when I met you.
Yes. Okay. Now, what was your major in college?
Oh, boy, my major was fun.
Okay.
I honestly, I wasn't ready for college.
Yeah,
I just went and I had a lot of fun.
Okay.
But my major was business management from the beginning.
Okay. I remember Barry was your room was like Fun Central.
Oh yeah.
That was a place that you kind of dropped by if you needed some fun and you had some despair. I distinctly remember the night that we explored the Queen Mary because I said, because I think you turn and you go, you like the Queen Mary? And I go, well, yeah. And you go, you want to see the plans? And you brought out this book, and it was the plans of the Queen Mary. You go, see, it's over here, and then down here is the pool, you know, and all this stuff. He goes, I wish I could show it to you. I go, you know what? I got a couple of hours. He goes, let's go. So we went and explored the pool on the Queen Mary. And then I knew there was more to Barry than just a real funny guy. So I knew. Go ahead.
We had, I honestly don't remember bringing you on the Queen Mary. I think I have escorted probably a couple of hundred people on the Queen Mary tour. I call it the Barry Adventure Tour of the Queen Mary.
Yeah.
I kid you not. I mean, probably over 200 people. And I just don't remember. I mean, honestly don't remember. I know that we did, but I don't remember the exact, you know, exactly what we did. But some of the memories stick out in your head. I must have taken you down to the pool area.
Yes. It's been years later, so, you know, and they probably forget. You had a stack of business cards. And the way it worked is we went down the exits, and we blocked the locks of all the doors so we could get back out. So we hit the pool, and you go, and here is the pool. All of a sudden, I hear this guy on this walkie-talkie, stop!
Oh,
yeah,
stop! So did we run? Did we run out? Did we try to escape, or did he kick us out?
No, they escorted us out of here. You had a few hushed moments with him, and I think you showed him a card, and you said, you know, really, we don't mean any harm. You know, we're just taking a look at the pool. And then they just kind of shook his head and go, no, you're out of here. Like, All right. So that was the moment that I realized that there was a lot more to Barry than I had realized, because that was kind of my test. You know, I didn't know whether you told a lot of yarns or if there was something to it. And I knew there was something to it. That was one of them. The second one was the story about you and Pat Gillen. And you said, we were on Family Ties last night. I go, oh, come on. You were not. You were not. Yes, we were. I'm telling you, you know, we went down there. And, you know, we went as an extra, and we were on Family Ties. And I go, you were in no such thing. And you go, just watch on May, whatever it was. And I go, okay, I'm going to watch. And I watched, and my jaw fell on the ground. Because there you Pat were in the background. And I'll never forget the show. It was the one where they were. Anyway, I distinctly remember the show. But you know, I think that was a different time. It was pre 9/11. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, I think if you had a kind, unassuming face and you look like you belong there, you could walk right past the gate, walk in there, kind of mingle around with people and do what they told you. And
you got to figure it out.
That's probably how it all happened.
Well,
and,
you know, when I lived in Minnesota, before I came to California, I came to California looking for adventure, and I, you know, even when I was in Minnesota, I was gearing up for it, and I was preparing for it, you know, to do. I just lived my life on the edge, and I wanted to do everything I wanted to do. You know, like, for example, my family, you know, my dad was an airline pilot, so I could travel all over the world for nothing, which is really a neat perk. But my family never wanted to go on a cruise, and my passion after seeing the Queen Mary for the first time in like 1977 was cruise ships and ocean liners, and I loved that. I had a passion for it, and yet my family, we never went on a cruise, and I desperately wanted to go on a cruise, and so I planned it all out, and I flew to St. Thomas, and I stowed away on a cruise ship. Because I knew how to do it. I figured it all out, and I just did it because I wanted to be there. Now, I wouldn't recommend that for anybody, because today things are a little bit different. You just can't do that.
Right.
But, you know, I enjoyed going to the studios to see where the movies and the TV shows were filmed. I mean, because here, again, I lived in Minnesota. We didn't have this in Minnesota. And
right.
So it was all fresh and new and adventure and exciting and, you know, movie stars and all that stuff. You know, you have it there in California. Everywhere you turn around, you've got Tom Cruise driving his car down the 405. And
yeah.
And we just don't have that here.
Sure.
So that sense of adventure, I brought that to college with me, and it was just nonstop. I mean, that's why I didn't get any studying done, because I was just too busy having fun, going on adventures, you know, going to the ocean, going to the mountains, going to the Queen Mary, going to Disney, going to, you know, all the places there in Southern California.
Yeah.
So.
Well, to be fair, you're not the first person that kind of snuck onto a lot. I mean, that's how Spielberg got his start.
I know, and I tried to sneak down into his little fortress there at Universal Studios,
mm-hmm.
and immediately was escorted back out of that area because they had cameras or something, and they could see, and I didn't even get to the door. They sent two Secret Service guys out. They looked like Secret Service men. They came running out, and they said, "You can't be here. Stop. What are you doing?"
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I don't know what that place is called. Do you remember what that little place is called there at Universal?
Yeah,
Universal?
It's called Amblin. That's
Amblin Entertainment. That's right.
Mm-hmm. That's his. It was a building that looked like the Alamo, and it was a big deal because it was built around the time his Amazing Stories show was on television, and so you know Amblin Entertainment and the Alamo and his offices and all that. So, well, that's I just did. you took fun, to the next level, and I think what was really cool is that you wanted to share that kind of excitement with folks, and you took Pat along with you to Paramount, if I remember, to go meet Gene Roddenberry, and I don't know if you did. I think you made it to his office. I can't remember.
Boy, you remember a lot. You remember more than I do. that was our first. That was the reason why we went to Paramount, was to try to meet Gene Roddenberry and to look at, you know, anything Star Trek. And we did see his office, but he wasn't in. And somebody quickly shuffled us out of there. But then we ended up looking around, snooping around, and we came to the set of Cheers, and we walked in and watched them tape some of that and. Got kind of bored of that. I didn't watch Cheers at the time, so I didn't know what it was. And then we went and saw a red light going on and go, "Oh, let's go through there," because we saw some other guy go through that door. So we just followed him in there. And we ended up behind the sets of Family Ties.
Mm.
And to make a long story short, we went and sat up in the audience area. And Pat and I were kind of looking at each other, and the director came up at some point and said, "Okay, who's going to be in scene A and who's going to be in scene B?" And turns out we were all mixed in with a group of extras.
Mm.
And so the guy looked at us and said, "What scene are you in?" And we kind of said, "Well, we don't know." And he said, "Well, you're both in scene B." And so we're like, "Oh, okay." And so they sent Pat to makeup or wardrobe or something, and I didn't need I needed a sweatshirt. They gave me a sweatshirt. And so we got all set up and got on, and Pat had no clue what he was doing. I mean, I kind of had an idea that, well, you're supposed to look like you're doing something. You know, look like you're supposed to look like you're talking or having a conversation, but you're not supposed to say anything. Well, it was really funny because he didn't know what to do, and he's standing there, right? And you can see it in the show when they show that episode. He's standing there kind of looking and watching them, watching Michael J. Fox act. And when Michael J. Fox had a joke, he laughed at the joke, and you're not supposed to do that as atmosphere. You know, you're not supposed to do that when you're just an extra. You're supposed to be kind of in the back, not knowing really what's going on.
Right.
And that was just funny.
Now, okay. Now let's talk about this. Now you mentioned it, but Pat didn't seem to be the kind of adventurous guy. what was it like to kind of watch that whole thing kind of transpire, putting him in a situation where, you know, he had to really kind of be calm and just kind of go with it?
What was he like in that kind of situation?
Well, you know, Pat is one of my best friends, and I mm-hmm. I'm still in touch with him today. And
sure.
He would eat, breathe, sleep, sports. That's all he cared about. And
yep.
you know what's really funny is that I don't know how we became such good friends because we have completely opposite interests.
Mm.
You know, he's interested in sports, and that's all he thought about. And the fact that I was from Minnesota, he kind of perked up, and because he's a big fan of the Vikings.
Mm.
And you know, in effect, the way we became friends was because we were in a class together, Intro to Business, and him and another friend of mine where they were sitting in the back row, and they were actually making fun of me as I was doing my report. We had to do a report, and I was winging it because I forgot that we had to do it, so I completely made it all up while I was up there. And so they were in the back laughing and making fun of me, and then after the thing, and we started to talk, and I said, didn't you live in Minnesota at one point? Did you ever, you know, because I thought he looked familiar, like somebody else I knew, and he wasn't, but he said, well, I'm not from Minnesota, but I have relatives that are in Minnesota, and I love the Vikings, and I'm like, oh, okay, well, that must be it. Well, somehow we just ended up hanging out more and more and more, and we just became really good friends, and it was really odd I'm sure it was really odd for him to kind of stretch himself and go on some of these adventures. You know, I took him to the Queen Mary, that whole adventure, and the Paramount Studios thing, that was just, it was just a fluke that we had such a fun day. In fact,
yeah.
we went that day and after sneaking into Paramount Studios, and then they told us we had to come back the next day to finish, you know, to finish taping. And so we did. We went back the next day.
Oh.
And, but he was like a fish out of water. He didn't really know what to do, but he did his best. And but it's fun to watch the show because you can kind of see that he doesn't know what he's like a deer with headlights out. You know, he didn't know what to do.
Yeah. Well, you may have really kind of introduced him to that type of thing because I remember Pat. I think I never saw him. He probably got married in that angel jacket. He was always wearing the angel jacket. He probably slept in it.
Yeah.
You know, I can just see him all the time in that angel jacket and the angel hat. He loved the angels, you know.
Yeah.
How cool that is to really take somebody who probably would never do it. In a pretty safe environment. I mean, you were there. You weren't going to leave him. But,
right.
but I mean, that's pretty cool that you would want to kind of share that and say, okay, you're probably never going to do this, but let's have fun. Well, what
right.
kind of fun? Just be quiet and just follow me. We're going to have my kind of fun. Okay. So that's pretty cool, you know? You know, and at the same time, you're living your dreams too, you know? Were you always a sci-fi fan, or?
You know, I don't know if I was always a sci-fi fan. I mean, there's a lot of shows I didn't care for, but you know, I like most young-blooded American boys, I grew up watching Star Trek.
Yeah.
And so I enjoyed that, and I'm very selective in what sci-fi things that I like to watch. You know, I'm a Star Wars fan. I like to watch Star Wars, and I'm not goofy about it. Look, hey, Jeff, I'm not goofy about it. I don't go to conventions really dress up like an Ewok or anything like that.
Hey, you know what? Hey, you know what? That's an adventure, Barry.
I have been to some of the conventions when they were in Minneapolis here, and I got to see the gal that was Counselor Troy. I got to see her, and I took a picture of her. And you know, but I just didn't understand the people that dressed up in all the costumes. I didn't understand that whole mentality. But it was fun to go there and see it. It was like watching a carnival or something.
Oh well, Barry. Listen, Pat wore his sports uniform. You get what I'm saying?
Yep.
Star Wars fans wear the costume. It's an extension of the fandom. Okay?
Oh, I know. I know. I have accepted that. You just won't see me doing that.
All right.
I'm a, you know, there's a difference. Those are Trekkies. I'm a Trekker.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to convert you over to Star Wars if it takes me the rest of my life. And
yeah,
is...
no, I like Star Wars. I like Star Wars, and I like one of my other favorites is Quantum Leap.
Okay.
And I liked all the Star Trek TV shows that were on, and my wife likes Star Trek too.
Okay.
And that, so we had fun when we were dating. We would, you know, hang out and watch Star Trek: The Next Generation, all new episodes, you know. So
because
they were still on at that time.
And that was back when the shows were good. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway. So I remember the picture of you in the. We're going to relive a lot of things tonight. I'm just going to tell you what I remember about you, and you can say no or yes. No, I remember the picture of you with the medicine ball over your head.
And
this medicine
man.
Ball was like a mile across, and you were holding this medicine ball, and I'm going, "That's Barry. That is Barry right there."
Well, you know, that was a very weird night because I had these. I had my Queen Mary shorts on.
Okay.
That were really loose fitting, and had the little logo of the Queen Mary on it. But and someone de-pantsed me that night.
Oh, okay.
So that I don't have fond memories of that night.
Well,
but I do remember the big ball. It was a big, huge inflated ball that you throw around the room in a gym.
Yeah, it was just really large. Let's see. So you graduated from college.
I'm going to have to stop you there.
Okay.
I'm one class short of my degree.
Ooh. Okay.
So I never really did get my degree. I failed accounting like 3 times and just said, I'm done. I'm out of here.
Oh. All right. Okay. So you almost did.
Almost.
Okay. All right. You know, and I think what's interesting, is, you know, when I went to college, you know, it was my first time out of the house and kind of away from, the structure of church and youth group. And I kind of felt God was an elective course, you know, it's kind of like PE, something that you could take if you wanted to. And I sat in the back of chapel. I had no interest, you know, I just, meh. And it was a growing experience for me because it took some time, but I met God on my own terms and outside of the structure of what I grew up in. And I think I'm stronger for it because it was a choice for me. Instead of that's just what everybody was doing.
Yeah.
And I know you're a Christian, and the question I want to ask is why Christianity, why God? You know, the Kabbalah is pretty big these days.
What?
You know, Scientology.
Oh.
You know,
Tom Cruise.
They got a spot for you.
You know, Jeff, when I first went to SCC, you know, you may not know this, but when I first went to SCC and I sat in a chapel service, I thought, uh-oh, what have I done? I am in some sort of cult. Because I didn't understand, I didn't come from a Pentecostal charismatic environment. I came from more of a Lutheran environment.
Okay.
And so in chapel, when they were raising their hands and speaking in tongues and clapping and cheering, and they had drums, they had a guy playing the drums during worship, I thought, what in the world is going on here? And I had to ask my dad. He came into town one time, and we sat down and had dinner, and I said, I don't know what's going on here. I'm in some sort of twilight zone here. The people are goofy in chapel. I don't know what's going on. Well, I eventually adapted to that. And, you know, I think college was really a pivotal time for me in my spiritual walk with God because I was in a singing group and we went out and toured. And we sang a lot of worshipful praise type songs and in churches, and it was very inspiring. And I learned that, you know, it's okay to raise your hands in worship. I tried it once, and it actually was a very free feeling. And it kind of opened me up, kind of like it was an antenna. When I raised my hands, it was kind of like an antenna, and I was able to tune in a little bit better spiritually. I don't know. I don't understand how it all works, you know, exactly. But so when I was in the singing group, that's where I really kind of got tuned into God even deeper. And my relationship, you know, grew quite a bit in college. And why Christianity? You know, it goes back to my upbringing. I grew up in a Christian family, and we went to church every Sunday. And not that that was always a very joyful, fun experience because church was, there was always arguments and fighting before going to church. And, you know, and my dad would make us wear a tie, and I was like, give me a break. And so we were always kind of fighting it. But, you know, I remember where I first decided consciously that I want to live my life for God. And that was when my dad and my mom and I, we went to India when I was a kid. I was like 12 years old. Hmm. And we toured around all of these temples where people were worshiping these idols. And there was one particular temple that I felt in my spirit somehow at a young age, do not go in there. And my dad and my mom went in there. And I stayed outside. I waited outside. I would not go in. And I remember later that night, we were in a mission. My dad's cousin was a missionary, and so we went to their mission compound. And I remember I had one of these wooden flutes that you can buy from any vendor that, you know, all these craft shops. And I was playing this flute alone out on the balcony or out on the, you know, the back of the house. And all of a sudden, I just got tuned in to God at that moment. And I started playing. I still have the flute. I'm looking at it right now. Hmm. But I started playing Alleluia, you know, that song, Alleluia. Mm-hmm. And it just dawned on me, these people who are worshiping these idols are so lost. And for some reason, I knew that my faith and what I was brought up with was the truth. I just at that moment knew it. And so at that moment I said, I'm going to follow you, Lord. And that was the beginning. That was when I was 12 years old.
Well, it is an interesting path going from a Lutheran, you know, kind of a quiet, more, you know, upbringing to the raucous SCC. You know, first of all, you have a bunch of college age kids who, you know, up and down emotionally and all this stuff, and then you know also have the charismatic background as well, and that must have been tough for you.
Well, it was difficult, but you know what? I think I have over the years become very balanced because of that. Because I remember this distinctly, is that when I was growing up in church, I mean, I went to a very good, solid Bible teaching church.
Sure.
And I knew the Bible pretty well, but the one thing that was lacking was worship and connecting to God through worship. I didn't understand that. I never comprehended that. And I never experienced that until I went to college. So that's where I got the balance. And to this day, you know, I have friends who, you know, are a little bit more Lutheran Baptist type. You know, they're believers, they're Christians, but they make fun of people that raise their hands, which I think is, you know, you should do that. But when they raise their hands in church, there's something about it. There's a connection that's made, not just raising your hands, but opening yourself up completely to allowing the Spirit of God to really, you're able to kind of commune with God.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned that in college. So that was a very good growth time for me. You know, I had a lot of fun in college. I had some real good spiritual things that came up in college where I learned a lot about God and my relationship with God. You know, college was a very crazy, crazy place because we had, I mean, we just in my floor. Were you on my floor? I was on the seventh floor.
I don't think so. I think I was on the third or something like that.
Well, I was on the seventh floor, and I was with all the surfer dudes. You know, pretty much all the time, and the whole my whole college experience, I was in the one room. I always managed to get the same room, room 711.
Mm.
And but I had all the surfer dudes, and I didn't understand that lifestyle or that. I didn't understand that. And we even had closet homosexuals at SEC, and I didn't understand that either. I thought, how in the world? How does that come together? I just couldn't figure that one out. But you know, it's because SEC was it was in Southern California. It was by the beach. You had the beach dudes, you know, surfer dudes. And it was, I don't know, it was just the environment was a little bit more open and relaxed.
Yeah.
You could go to class with your shorts on.
Yeah.
You didn't have to wear a tie. You know, the college that I really wanted to go to but couldn't get into was Oral Roberts University.
Hmm.
But I didn't have the grades, and I'm glad I didn't go there because they didn't allow beards either.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah, that's I don't know if you. Yeah, that'd have been tough for me. Boy. Well, I think it's really cool that you gave it a chance, though. Is just the whole kind of worship in a different way. It definitely sounds like, you know, maybe some of your friends or the folks you know. Still are kind of don't understand that, and then kind of making comments. But you know, it's a personal way that people commune or express their love to God. You know, and it's kind of a I think it's a personal thing. You know, and I think there's one thing to kind of dance and roll around the aisles. But, you know, I mean, if you want to raise your hand or whatever, I don't see any problem with it. But I'm glad that you kind of, you know, let them do what they did. And you know, when you felt it was right for you, then it was right for you. So that's pretty cool. When I was done with college, that's kind of when, you know, God decided to kind of revisit me and say, okay, we're done playing around. And, that's when, I went to the Vineyard Church, which is a charismatic church. And, I think the big difference just in to agree with what you're saying, at least maybe in a different way, is, that I think songs before were about God, but the worship that I used to, the worship that I kind of was introduced to was singing to God. It was a more personal, time. So anyway, you know, it's it happens all the time. I'm not going to answer that. Anyway, but so it definitely sounds like it was kind of a exposing you to different types of people and worship and all this kind of stuff, and it sounds like it was a really good experience for you.
It was. I mean, college was a good experience. Oh boy, you know, I wouldn't trade it for anything. I wish I would have studied harder now that in retrospect, but I made a lot of friends, and I still am in touch with a huge majority of my friends from college.
I don't want to scoop it too much because I want to talk about it later, but that's really what I appreciate about your website is how much your friends and staying connected is important to you, and so I just think that's really cool that
still friends with Pat and all this kind of stuff. And I know that life happens to everybody. But anyway, so.
No, yeah, it just happened to be good at keeping in touch with people because I'm determined. And you have to make a conscious decision. Do I want to stay in touch with this person? And
right.
My answer is usually, well, yeah, why not? You know,
right.
We had a lot of fun times. And, you know, Pat, I still am in touch with him. And he's now the director at Cal State Dominguez Hills of the whole sports department.
Wow.
So he's doing really well.
Yeah.
But
now,
yeah.
So you went from at the end of your college days, you went back to Minnesota?
Oh boy, it's just a long, complicated story.
Okay.
But I don't have to get into all the complicated stuff.
We can skip to Terry if you want.
No, well, I can give you like a really quick overview. I mean, I basically muddled through college a little bit, and
okay.
I struggled, you know, with the academics. And I took a summer off and went to work on cruise ships.
Okay.
As an entertainer and a cruise director. And when I came, and while I was on the ships, I got a letter from Wayne Crace, or I think, who was the president of the college at the time, and and he said, or somebody there, I don't remember who it was, and he said, well, you're not going to be accepted back into the college because of your grades. And I fell apart. I mean, that was devastating, you know, because I was expecting to go back.
Right.
And so I said, well, what do I need to do to come back? And he said, well, you need to take classes at another college and achieve this grade level at another college, like a community college, and then we'll look at it and we'll look at it and see if we'll let you come back again. And so I did that. I went to Orange Coast College, took a couple, you know, I took some classes and I think two semesters or something like that, and went back to the SEC and they said, well, yep, you did what we required and come on back.
Okay.
So I went back to SEC and tried to finish and just, I worked hard at it then. At that point, I was very serious, but I just couldn't get past the accounting.
Yeah.
So and then one thing led to another, and I got another job on the ships, and so I took off. And then bottom line, I just never went back to college. I never finished, you know, that one class. And it's more complicated than that. Why? I have to do more than just finish one class. I mean,
okay.
I have to do a little bit of work on my GPA. But boy, that's way in. I don't know if I'll ever go back to college again. But I eventually, you know, really enjoyed working on the ships and lived out my wildest fantasy, which was to work on the Queen Elizabeth II.
Mm.
And I did that for a short time. And after that, in a roundabout way, I ended up back in Minnesota just for a visit to visit my mother. And I never left. So here I am, back in Minnesota.
Now I couldn't really tell that you're from Minnesota by your accent or anything.
Oh, well, you know, I've been to California. I lived in California for like 8 or 9 years, and I may have lost some of my accent bit. But when I remember my roommates used to tease me about my accent, my Minnesota accent. I may have lost it. I don't know.
Well, you got to hang on to your roots, man. Just hang on to the accent. Even though you don't think you have one, just hang on to whatever you got.
Okay.
Because that's who you are, man. You know, I mean, you know, we all talk like Val people and surfer people. So, anyway, you know, that's how we stay connected to where we're from.
Yeah, you don't hear me saying dude.
I know. I know.
Do that.
I'll do that. I say dude and cool. I'm 40-something. I still talk like I'm, you know, some outdated kid from the 70s, you know. But that's okay. Because I probably am. Now, all right. So you were in the choir at SEC, if I remember right.
I was, and I was in the choir, and I was also in the Vanguard Singers, which was the worship kind of it was a worship, more fine-tuned worship choir that went out and toured. The choir
right.
was a big group, but the Vanguard yeah. Singers was like only like, I think, 12 singers. I forget how many exactly. And so we had the singers, and then we had the band, and we traveled together. And that was a fun experience.
Now, who was the choir director?
It was Noel Wilson.
Noel Wilson. Okay. Right. Now, you played an instrument?
Jeff, you must remember when we went on the Queen Mary and I played the piano, or somewhere in college or somewhere you heard me play the piano, and yes, I can fake it really good. I play by ear, and I can play a whole mess of things on the piano, but it's
Barry,
all...
You played Send In the Clowns, Barry.
Right, I know, I can play that, but it's all by ear. I never learned how to read music.
How in the world can you play that by ear and not understand music or structure?
I use the force.
Oh.
In your lingo, in Star Wars lingo, I use the force.
I deserve this. I deserve it. There's some past error I'm getting paid back for. But anyway, no, you played pretty well.
I did. I faked it. When I was a little kid, I was gifted with being able to play the piano by ear. I could just play it, and I practiced. And we have a little music store in a mall here. And when I was a kid, I'd go to that mall, and they had this big, great, grand piano in this glassed-in area where people on the mall could walk by. And I would go there, and I would play like I was, a professional. And you wouldn't know the difference. And people would stop and look and cheer and go, ooh, here's this kid, young kid playing like that. But I really was faking it the whole time. I mean, I could play, but I couldn't read music. I knew what it sounded good.
Well, you have me fooled. Because I think I remember I said, well, play something else. And you go, no, let's go.
Yeah, that's about it. Well, I can play The Entertainer, Send In the Clowns, and I can improvise. I improvise on the piano.
That's beautiful, man. Because I can do a lot of things. I've done some stand-up comedian. I can talk my way, through just about any type of presentation. But playing an instrument, no can do, man. I mean, I play guitar, but when you start talking about playing the piano, I can do maybe chopsticks. And maybe a running. That's about it.
I can't play the guitar. I don't get that instrument. I tried to play the trumpet once a long time ago. I always thought it'd be cool to play the drums, but I can't do that either. But the piano, I hooked up to it for some reason. It just worked out.
Well, you are a man that has many talents. So, all right. So, tell me about how you met Terry.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say some more, and then it ended. Did we get cut off? Are you there?
No, I'm here. Tell me how you met Terry, and tell me about the proposal.
Did you read this on my website? Is that why you want me to tell the story?
Barry, it's a very important thing of your life, when you met the love of your life. And,
All right. And I don't know if anybody even cares or about this part of my life, but I'll spill the beans.
Okay.
Yes, I have dated and dated and dated over the years. Went out on dates, I should say, many, many times. Never really had a steady girlfriend. Really can't ever say that I did. But when I was in Minnesota, after I'd moved back to Minnesota, I tried everything. Oh, Jeff, you I've got some funny stories. I don't know if you want to hear it or not, but before I met Terry, I tried everything. I was desperate. I wanted to go. I wanted a date. So I tried the phone dating thing where you listen to all these ladies on the phone, and then you pick which one you want to go. You want to talk to, and then you enter a PIN number, and then you can talk to her. And so I set up a date with two of those girls that I met on that deal. What a huge, huge mistake that was. The one gal I met with, she was interested in Star Trek, and she sounded really fun, and we talked for a half hour. or more on the phone, and we said, well, let's meet somewhere, you know, for a coffee or something. She goes, okay, that sounds great. So we set up a meeting place, and I told her, I've got a beard, and I'm about 5'8", and brown hair, and whatever. And she goes, well, I'm so and so, and this and that, and I'm a little overweight. And I'm like, oh, okay, all right, no problem. Well, we met at a Taco Bell, and Jeff, I'm not kidding. When this gal came through the, she could barely fit through the doors of the restaurant. I'm not kidding, and I'm not being mean. I'm telling you, the gal barely was. She was so enormous, she could barely fit through the door. Wait, just a second. We sat down. We chit chat a little bit, and I was very nice. And I said, well, let's go for a walk down by the boats by the Mississippi. There's my Minnesota accent, boats. And so we went down, and we walked like just like 50 feet, and she was so out of breath, she couldn't go any further. So we said, let's just go back and let's say our goodbyes and see you later. And that was the end of that one. So, well, Jeff, I had a miserable, miserable dating experience in Minnesota.
Okay, well, you know, a lot of us gentlemen aren't thin either.
Well, no, it's not that. I'm a big guy. I'm a big guy. I'm bigger now than I was then. But I mean, she was twice as big as me. I mean, she was massive, and it was just you would not believe it. And then the other gal that I went out with, I thought she was very nice. I met her in this high rise and at where she lived. And I went into the building and I called her number and she came. She said, "Okay, I'll be right down." And so I'm thinking she's probably very cute. And well, she was very cute, but she was crippled, like twisted up like a pretzel. And I'm not joking. I am not kidding, Jeff. She could barely walk on her own. I think she probably normally uses some sort of a device to help her walk. And I was shocked. I was so shocked because I told her, when we were talking, that I'm very active. I like to walk around the lakes. I like to go horseback riding. She goes, oh, I like all that too. And yeah, that sounds great. There's no way she could ever do any of that. She could barely walk. But I said, well, I was a gentleman. We got in the car. I had to help her get her seatbelt on. She couldn't do that. And we went to the restaurant and we had a nice time. And she was a very nice gal, but it was kind of deceiving because she was, and nothing about people that are physically challenged, but that was a little deceiving because I told her what I like to do, and she said, oh, yeah, I like to do all that too, but she couldn't do any of that. So it was just not a good match.
Well, she wanted to find love on, you know, phone a friend or whatever.
Oh, my goodness, Jeff. So I gave up. I did. I gave up on – I even tried the secret admirer with some gal I met at church that was very nice, and I won't get into that, but that failed miserably. And so I gave up completely, and I remember distinctly I was in the shower, and for some reason God always oftentimes talks to me while I'm in the shower. I don't know why. And I was in the shower.
All right. That's because the phone can't ring in there. Go ahead.
Okay. I was in the shower and maybe that wasn't the shower one, but well, no, I just gave up. I told God, look, I give up. If I'm ever going to get married, then you're going to have to bring her into my life and she's going to have to hit me over the head and it's going to have to work out that way. She's going to have to pursue me because I give up. You know, I've done everything I could possibly do, and I just give up. And sure enough, I was in church. At the time, I was asked to start a singles group in our church. And so I, in a roundabout way, eventually became like a singles pastor. And I was up on stage with the pastor talking about event that we were going to do, and I had my cruise whites on. You know, I had my white pants, white shoes, and my blue blazer that I used to wear on the ships. And this gal, Terry, was visiting with her parents, and she looked up there and she saw me, and for somehow, some way, she thought, that guy, I want to get to know that guy. And I, for some reason, she felt that I was going to have a big part of her life. And I was, when I met her, I was very nice because, you know, I was a singles guy, and I was always welcoming and wanting everybody to join and trying to recruit, you know, other singles. And so, you know, I was very nice and invited her to things, and I could see this little glimmer in her eye, you know, that she kind of had her eye on me. And I knew that. I kind of had an inkling about that, but I was in no way, shape, or form attracted to her, period. I was not attracted to her. And so I just said, no, I'm not going to go down that road. Not going to happen. But you know what? One day we were walking in the Mall of America, and a friend of mine that was hanging out with us said, you know, she would make a good wife. She really likes you, you know. You got to look more into that. Well, to make a long story short, Terry and I were walking in the mall, and we walked past this perfume shop, and I made this kind of a growling sound, and she said, what's that all about? And I said, well, there's this one perfume that just gets me going, and I said, if you were ever to put that on, I would not be responsible for my actions. And she goes, ooh, that sounds fun. And, well, sure enough, Jeff, that she went out later at some point and bought that stuff, which was very expensive perfume.
Right.
And that next Sunday morning, she was sitting with her parents, and I always sat up front with the pastor, and she came down and walked past me, and I smelled that stuff on her, and I looked at her and I said, you're bad. And I knew she wanted me to ask her out. I knew that she wanted to go out. So I said, all right, fine, I'll ask her out. So I did. I asked her out. And we went on a date. We went and saw the movie Liar, Liar. We went to a Greek restaurant. And, you know, we're sitting in the car after, and I was dropping her off. And I'm like, well, I'll kiss her. And I kissed her, and that was it. That was the beginning of the end for me.
Well, now, you know, that's a nice story.
Yeah.
Romantic, you know.
Yeah.
She really fell for you, and you went along kicking and screaming, but, you know.
I did. But, you know, I fell in love with, you know, I was still struggling because I was not attracted to her. But you know what? I have a lot of friends, a lot of my buddies that were not married, and they will not, I mean, they aspire to go out with women that look like models, and
right.
They have that attractiveness, that perfection, that beauty has to be there in order for them to even go out with a gal. And you know, I guess my whole life I was always the type of person that looked at the heart, and in this case with Terry, you know, I grew to be attracted to her, and I fell in love with her heart, and the fact that I can't explain it, but there was a point where while we were dating, here's the shower thing. Okay, I was in the shower, and I felt that God saying to me, okay, Barry, I brought her into your life, now what are you going to do about it? And so that was only a few times where God spoke to me in my life, and that was one of them. And so I said, well, okay, I'm going to have to investigate this a little further. And we were dating steady at that time, and we had a very short courtship. I mean, we met our first date was in March, and May we went to California, and I proposed to her. And we got married in September. It happened all that quickly. And I proposed to her. I proposed to her on the Queen Mary in Long Beach.
All right, there you go. Attaboy. That's good.
She wasn't expecting it. That was what was really great about it. She, because we had talked about marriage, and I said, you know, I'm just not ready for it. We need to just kind of take it slow. But I was convinced this is the right thing to do, and so I got a ring, and I planned this whole elaborate thing at the Queen Mary. And what I did was I went to the Mall of America with the ring, and I went to one of these Godiva chocolate shops. Are we going to run out of time?
Nope. Keep going.
Okay. And I bought a box of chocolate, and I put the ring with a note in the underneath the chocolate, underneath the paper, and then they shrink wrapped it, so it looked like it was brand new. And I secretly brought this with us on our trip to California because I wanted to introduce her to my friends in California.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went to the Queen Mary. We went on the Queen Mary adventure. It was very, you know, exciting for her. And I took her out on deck. And I pretended to go in and buy the box of chocolate. And so she saw that. She thought I bought it there on the Queen Mary. And I said, this is for later. This is like a reward after the adventure. And so we went to the bow of the Queen Mary after the adventure, and I said, okay, let's eat our candy. So we got the opened it up, and we had pieces of candy, and we're just standing there, and it was a beautiful sunset, and we're on the bow of the Queen Mary, and we were in kind of a nice secluded area, and she finally took the last piece and looked under that thing, and there was this ring. She picked it up, and she just kind of looked at it like, well, what's this? And she's looking at it, holding it right next to the railing, and I said, move back, please. Because that was, I was afraid she would, like, fumble it into the water 90 feet below.
Right. Right.
And so I took the ring from her, I got on my knee, and I proposed to her, and she said yes, and it completely took her by surprise. In fact, I even got her dad's permission.
Yeah.
I asked for her hand from her dad. And that was the right thing to do, apparently. Things wouldn't have worked out too well if I didn't do that.
Okay.
So that was the beginning. And you know what? It's been a great marriage. We've had a great marriage. We've been married 10 years now this September. And I would do it all over again. And we just get along great. So people see us together and they go, you guys just look like you belong together. So that's my story and I'm sticking to it.
Okay. Now, I'm glad you ended up like you do it all over again because leading up to it, you sounded pretty ho-hum about the whole thing.
Well,
she
knows that too. She knows I was not attracted to her. I told her. I mean, she knows that, but she also knows the whole story. So it's a very endearing and very, it's a nice story.
I got to tell you this, and this is the truth, is that there's some people will say, it was, lightning and all this kind of stuff. But the flip side of it, somebody's got to put up with you. And
exactly.
Now that's the truth. It's not just, who am I attracted to? No, somebody needs to be attracted and put up with you.
Exactly.
I mean, that's
Oh, look. Jeff, you caught me. That's it. You got it right. You hit it right on the head. I mean, I had to find a woman that would be able to handle my crazy adventures.
Yeah.
She's done very well. She's never been out of the country before we got married, before I met her. And now I've taken her on like 5 cruises. We've been on, went to other countries, and I've broadened her horizons, and she's broadened my horizons too.
See?
It's kind of like
God and Michael standing there, and God goes, I think I'm going to put Jeff together with that Colleen woman right there. And Michael goes, are you sure you want to do that to her? Well, okay, I'll give her more grace and she'll learn to live. And it's the same thing, with you guys too. I mean, it's just, it's a two-way street. And it's funny, normally when you talk about, how guys fell in love with a woman, it's all, flash and this and that, like you were saying too. But marriage is tough, man. I always say marriage is like building a bridge. And that never happens overnight. You want to build something that will last, that will sustain, that will be there for all time. And to do that, it takes work. And it takes work putting up with people that leave their clothes all over. I'm that one. We all have our eccentricities. and all this kind of stuff.
Not me.
you're the only one. You're the guy? Oh, man, I found you. You're the one that doesn't. No, but, I mean, it's just, you know, and that's Colleen's famous for saying this about Cinderella. And hold on, let me bring her on. Hi, Saweetie.
Hello.
Hi, can you talk?
Yeah, I can talk.
Okay. So your famous quote, Barry, this is Colleen, meet Barry.
Hello.
Hi, Colleen.
I've been listening the whole time. I've enjoyed the show so far.
Good.
Now, you said, Colleen, you said that they never show you the rest of the story of, I think, Sleeping Beauty or which fairy tale?
It's any of them. I mean, let's face facts. After the fairy, you know, the Prince Charming sweeps the princess off her feet, and they get married, and they dance and twirl into the sunset. That's wonderful, and little girls love that. But it's very misleading because they don't tell you that the very next day they go to the castle, and the prince is a slob and leaves his stuff all over the place. And then he scratches himself. And
honey, I think you better get back to whatever you were doing. You must have been doing something else important.
I know. You know, now that I think about it, we don't know what happened after Pretty Woman.
You know what? We really don't. He carried her off, and, you know, she rescued him right back, and, okay. So then what? He got tired of her after a few years and kept her in an apartment? Did they get married? Did they have children? But nobody ever tells you that the movies and the fairy tales they're wonderful stories, they're entertaining, and yes, they fill little girls' heads with these outrageous fantasies, but they're not realistic, and they don't tell you what happens. They don't tell you the reality of it, and I think that's where a lot of people, unfortunately, miss the mark, and that's why things don't work out always the way that, you know, you'd hope, because some people do have that mental image in their head of, oh, it's so romantic. Yeah, you know what? Marriage is not really romantic all the time. Really not.
No. I don't remember the last time our marriage has been romantic, but you know what? Romance is not everything. You know, what really matters, I think, and this is my personal opinion, is commitment and love, just showing love, because love is an action, it's not a feeling.
Absolutely.
There is feelings involved, but love is an action. You love somebody, which is something you do, and you choose to do that, and I think you know, if you go into marriage with an open mind, an open heart, and you're just an open book with your spouse, that
an open wallet.
You know, you're right.
Yeah,
I think things will work out. But people do have even guys have wrong expectations that are not right. You know, that are not accurate.
Right, and what's funny is that you know, you're the first guy that's ever said that, because a lot of guys will say, yeah, you women all think that it's all Sleeping Beauty and Snow White and Cinderella. Well, what's the counterpoint for men? Where do you guys get your fantasies from?
Well, let me tell you, I thought it was all going to be, well, now for the first time in my life, I'm going to get action every night. you know what? That was the biggest fairy tale blast that I had, was that it doesn't happen every night.
Right.
Well,
no.
Oh, well.
Not for most people, anyway.
Maybe for you guys. I don't know.
No. Not for most people. But see, where did that misconception come from?
I don't know. It was an expectation after being single for like 35 years or however long I was single. It was an expectation all built up inside, and like, and then we get married, and you know, sure, the first couple months, but then, oh boy, now it's like,
it's settled. Yeah, maybe tomorrow.
The next person that tells me that Christians don't talk about sex, I'm gonna tell them this show.
That God created sex. God created marriage, and He created it to be good. He said it was
good. And He created naked people.
Huh?
Oh, yeah.
And he created naked people.
Naked people? Yeah.
Absolutely, he did.
You would not want to see us naked.
Yeah, some people really shouldn't.
Okay. We're going to move on.
Let's move on.
All right.
That's one thing that has kept, honestly, that's one thing that has kept our marriage good is a sense of humor. We look at each other and we laugh at each other's strange shapes and whatever, and we make fun of each other, and we do it in a fun, loving kind of way, and we laugh. One of the secrets to my marriage is I make my wife laugh every day, and she does. She laughs until she almost pees her pants. But it's healthy. Laughing is healthy.
I know. Yes. Now, in your marriage with your wonderful wife, whom you finally caved in to, you know, asking and all this, there are times in your marriage that are growth times for you. When you go beyond the honeymoon phase and the newness phase to, you know, the day to day. But then there's also growing periods of time. Now, you're a father.
I am.
And
people are very afraid of that, but because I've actually spawned a child, but you know what? He's just like me when I was a little kid.
Hmm? So you know his tricks.
I do. I know what he's thinking when he's scheming in his head. I know exactly what he's thinking, and I could tell him, I know what you're thinking. Because he's just like me when I was a kid. My mom tells me that. My dad tells me that. And so I'm in big trouble. I have to. I am. My big challenge in life now as a father is going to be to mold and shape my son and train him so that he has as much fun as I did, but a little bit more controlled.
Okay. Now, how has your son enhanced, changed, or given more clarity to your relationship with God? Does it help you? Does it, you see it clear or no?
Yes. I don't know.
Okay.
That was something that was definitely, for me, I can go with the punches and go with the flow very easily. That's the way my personality is. My wife, on the other hand, had a tough time with a baby and a child, and still does, because she always thought of herself as a professional woman, you know, a businesswoman, and, you know, working in a professional world, and that did not pan out to be her life. She has to have all her ducks in a row, and she's in a certain way, that's her personality. She has to be very structured, and she doesn't like surprises. Well, when you have a child, you have to be very flexible, and you have to be very tolerant and very calm and very, you know, you have to be very spontaneous sometimes, and that was not her personality. So it was very tough for her being a mom. She does a great job, of course. I have to tell her that all the time. But that was when we became adults, I think, when we had a child. We realized, okay, we have a child now. Now we have to be serious about life.
Yeah. Now, because some people say that, you know, when they're a Christian before they're a parent, that, you know, they kind of look to their parents and they say, well, then that must be what God's like. And, you know, some people's parents have issues and difficulties and all this kind of stuff, and so it's kind of a struggle. But I've heard when people have children that they kind of look at the child and they say, well, that's like me, and now I kind of am clued into how God loves me when I don't do what I should do. And it kind of brings things into perspective. Has that happened to you? Do you read the Bible maybe differently now or not?
Oh boy, you're opening a can of worms here, but I'm the type of person, I need a lot of pictures when I look at a book.
Okay.
I look at the pictures. There's too much word, too many words. I have to read too much. No, I'm not a big reader. I do read the Bible.
Okay.
I read books, you know, on occasion, but I'm not a huge reader.
Okay.
But to get to your point, which I really don't know what your point was, actually. Let me make
That's
one
okay.
up.
That's
let me
okay.
make one up. When I had a son, you know, when you have a son, that changes the dynamic of your relationship with God too, because now you have this little person that is part of you, but also is an individual that God created, and it's humbling to see that, and when that little child relies on you and looks up to you and needs you, that boy, that gives you some perspective of how our relationship was with God, and how it should be or could be, and when you have children, it brings your marriage and your relationship with God to a new dimension.
I'm going to ask you a question. You can answer it however you like, or we can move on. Okay. Your marriage has had some challenges in the health department.
I wouldn't say that our marriage has had problems in the health department. Both of us have had health issues. Before I met Terry, or a year before I met Terry, she had brain surgery.
Yeah.
And so that was a big issue with her. And
I guess that's what I was getting at is I'm sorry about the time frame on that. But I mean that's difficult for anybody.
Yeah.
First of all, it's great that, you know, she's still here and all, but I mean, how do you kind of put that into your love and belief that God does allow, you know, pain and difficulty, and sometimes you have to be operated on? I mean, because that's serious, Barry. That's not just, oh, well, you know, my leg had a problem and I just had an operation. I mean, it's a brain tumor. That's serious.
Well, you know, I think that it was all orchestrated by God, because if she did not have the brain surgery, she may have struggled in pain for many years to come after that, or she may have died. I don't know. But I've been told from her family that she was a completely different person before her brain surgery. She was not as bubbly, not as open, a lot more shy, very quiet, because she was always in pain. And after her surgery, all that pain for the most part was gone. And actually, her testimony is that after her brain surgery, she felt that God was telling her, okay, I've healed you now of the pain. Now you can get married. Now I'll shortly, in a very short period of time, I'm going to bring somebody into your life. Mm. And that's what happened, because she thought up until that a year before we met, she thought, you know, while she still had that tumor, she thought that she would never have a family and never be able to get married because of the pain. And after that, it was an answer to prayer on her part and her family, because now that pain was gone, you know, and sometimes we need to have doctors dig in her head and pull the stuff out. That's bad brain. That's basically what they did. She had a little section of bad brain and they pulled it out, and now she's fine. Transformed. She now, you know, after that, she realized, now I can get married. And she had kind of that revelation, you know, between her and God, God was going to bring somebody into her life, and shortly after that, she saw me up on the stage and said, that's the one.
Well, that's pretty cool that, you know, in a through a sad situation, it was kind of, because I know that women are very concerned about that kind of stuff, and from what your blog said that she had a lot of headaches before the surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's the way a woman thinks. They worry. And so it's cool that things kind of all came together. And, I mean, I think the reason why I ask is it's, first of all, I mean, there's 8 billion people, whatever, on the planet or something like that, or in the U.S. or whatever. I mean, the way two people can just get along to, like, talk and then take it to the next level, get along to the point where they want to hang out for a while and then get married. I mean, you know, I mean, we're talking about, you know, some pretty high stakes here.
Well,
and
Jeff,
then it's how to make it. So
Jeff, I think, you know, that I sincerely think that God brought us together, that my wife and I, because, mm-hmm. You know, if I was in college and I saw her around college, I would never have asked her out. It just wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
And you know, we've gone through so much, you know, since we met and dated and got married and had a child. I mean, our lives have changed and evolved to the point where now, you know, we're wanting to fine tune our lives.
Mm-hmm.
We've had all these experiences and over the last 10 years, and now we're ready for some changes. We're ready for to kind of fine tune our life, and I don't know if I'm explaining it well enough, but
no, that's good. You know, you can elaborate if you want, or we'll just leave it as a fine tuning.
Well, fine tuning. We both have different challenges. We both want to lose weight.
Okay.
We both have a CPAP machine that we use every night. So we both, hey, listen to this. We both sound like Darth Vader every night. So when you walk into our room, it's like there's two Darth Vaders. Because we have these CPAP machines. I don't know if you know what the CPAP machine is. It's for people that have sleep apnea.
Yes. Yes.
So we both have a little, I have a worst case. She's got a mild case of sleep apnea. And so we have these machines that basically air being shoved up our nose. And it's not so bad. I thought it'd be hard to adjust to, but it helps us both sleep. So it's not that romantic, but.
Okay.
But anyways, we both have kind of some health challenges that we're trying to get through. And those are just, you know, those are issues that we deal with in our marriage, one day at a time. And you know, we both are concerned about each other, and you know, we were just made for each other. I just know that, you know, I'm glad I'm married to her still, even to this day, because I wouldn't want to do it all over again. That's for sure.
Yeah. Now,
I wouldn't want to start looking again. I would do it all over again, but I wouldn't want to start from scratch today. I would be absolutely the most miserable man on earth if I had to start all over again.
That is true. And my prayers and my support go to you guys to make the steps you need to get healthy, and whatever that means to you, okay? So, you know, if that means cutting back, if that means walking, if that means exercising, I've gone down the same road as well. So, you know, I had a heart-to-heart with the doc, and there was a couple of options, and I took the tough one. So, anyway, you know, good luck to you on that, okay?
You took the tough one. What was that?
Diet and exercise.
Oh, that is the tough one.
Yeah, that.
But you know, we just went to a meeting last night. It was an open kind of a conference about surgical issue. You know, surgically.
Okay.
What is it called? I don't know what it's called.
And there's
some sort of bypass, stomach bypass, something or other, and. You know, I went to that with an open mind, and I left that meeting saying, no, that's not going to happen. I'm not doing that. So I am going down that hard path, too. That's the path that I've chosen.
Yeah.
It's not going to be easy. And
you can do it. You can do it. It's just you have to face it 100% and do it 100%.
Right.
You can do it. And what's really cool is once it starts, you'll really pick up momentum. But that first day, that first week, that first month, it's tough. But,
well, I've done it before, it's not fun. But you kind of get into a groove and you start losing it, and people start looking at you going, hey, what's different? Boy, you look different. You look better. You look thinner. I like that, but it is challenging. It's something that you have
to
do daily.
I'm not trying to use a trump card, but you owe it to your son to do that.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Well, yeah. I mean, I want to be there for him when he goes. He's a very active kid. So I mean, the other day he said, "Daddy, I want to ride around the block on my bike." And so I don't have a bike. So guess what I had to do? I had to walk around the block with him.
Right.
I can walk around the block. It's no big deal. I'd like to be able to get this excess weight off so that I don't have to struggle as much.
Yeah.
And down the road, just for health reasons, just so that I'm, healthy for him as he's grown up, I can go to all of his games or his concerts or whatever he ends up doing without any problems.
Yep. I'm in your corner, man, okay? If you ever want to talk about it, if you ever need, whatever, okay?
All righty then.
Okay. What a great story thus far. This has been a great interview. I knew it would be. Let's shift gears a bit. Not to say anything that we've talked about is not important. I think it's all been excellent. I want to talk about Barry now, as far as the different businesses. You are a bit of an entrepreneur, and I'd like you to kind of maybe touch on maybe a couple of things that you do, but then also, where you're headed and what you want to accomplish. So you want to talk to that?
Yeah. Well, thanks for letting me talk about that. I mean, I am the type of person who I've never wanted to do a job that I didn't like. I always wanted to have a career doing something that I enjoyed, because if you find a job that you enjoy, then it's not a job, it's not work. And so if you can get paid doing what you like to do, well then that. And I think a lot of people miss the boat, using kind of an interesting pun. A lot of people miss the boat when it comes to their career. I remember in college, a lot of these friends of mine worked. Or they went to college for business or theater or film production or whatever it was, and now they're flipping burgers or they're doing some mundane job. Nothing had nothing to do with their college courses that they took or their major. It had nothing to do with their major, and they're caught into a job because that somehow over the roundabout way over the years they just ended up there. And it was like they were directed and maneuvered. Not they didn't do it themselves, but that's just how life panned out for them. Well, I've been the type of person I've always wanted to be in command of my career, and I've always wanted to make the decisions. This is the direction I want to go. I don't want to go here because I have to or because I've been doing it for many years, but I've always wanted to get into a career doing something that I enjoy. Well, my passion is the cruise industry. I love the cruise industry. I've been involved in many aspects of the cruise industry. So that is a direction that is close to my heart. I worked on the ships mostly to get some practical experience, unique experience that I can apply to my real vision for my future and my career, which was to open up a cruise-only travel business. I wanted to help people put people on cruises and open up a cruise store, basically, where people could come and it was very specialized, and they could book their cruise through me. And I've booked thousands and thousands of people on cruises now. And so I've lived out that dream, but I've kind of stalled here because I don't have the cash flow that I need to, that I've needed to really get this thing moving again. And so that's where I'm at right now. I'm to the point now where I'm about to spin it off again and move ahead with my cruise vision. I have a decent website now, and I just need to put some finishing touches and complete the website. But over the last, since 1993, I've had a business called Global Cruise Centers, where I specialize in putting cruises together. And
what makes that different than anything else?
Well, when you go, I've never wanted to be a travel agent. So, I mean, I guess when I say that I have a cruise business, they might think I'm a travel agent. Well, I'm not. I specialize in just cruises because that's what I know the best and that's what I like. And so when people are thinking about going on a cruise, they want to talk to an expert. Well, I am an expert on the cruise industry. And so when they talk to me, I can say, well, I've been on that ship. I know that ship. I know the environment. I know what to expect. I can give you complete, background on what to expect on your first cruise or your second cruise or whatever. And I help people, I help people plan their vacation, their cruise vacation. And what I love about my job is that when I put a first-time cruiser on a cruise, they always come, that 99% of the time they come back and they absolutely love me. And they say, Barry, you were right. We had a great time. We're going to go again. And so that has been that's been a lot of fun for my job or my career is putting people on cruises and getting that satisfaction from them, that they had a good time and a relaxing time and an enjoyable, fun vacation that they'll do again someday. And I have a lot of repeat customers because, I really treat my customers well. I go the extra mile and make sure that they have a flawless experience. And, to take my cruise business up a notch, what I've done was I kind of developed another specialty, which is putting groups together. And that's where really the money is putting groups together. But that's a lot harder to do. When you're a one-man show like I am, that it's not easy to do that. But I have, over the years, put together some decent groups and made some good money. In 1999, I put a group together of 225 people. And so my wife and I got to go free. Her parents got to go free. My mom got to go free. I mean, I brought people, friends with me because I had so many people. I had all these free cabins to give away. And it was a great experience. We made money. I got to buy the car I've always wanted to get. I bought a BMW, the money that I earned from that trip. And I've put a number of other groups together since then. And that's really where the money is, and that's what makes my job fun is putting these groups together and then hosting the group, during the cruise. So I get to go on the cruise and get paid to go on the cruise. And because I love being at sea. I mean, Jeff, I am so in my element. If you were to see, you've seen me on the Queen Mary. That's a different story. But if you were to be on a cruise with me, you and your wife have got to go on a cruise with me. Maybe we could do one of these podcasts from a cruise.
Sure.
While we're on a cruise. But, I mean, if you were to see me on a cruise, you will see Barry in his element. I'm totally in my element when I'm on a ship and when we're at sea. That's just, I love that. I don't know if you've ever been on a cruise or not, but it's just a great experience. I love walking the decks at sunset or sunrise. And just being with the sea gently, flowing below you and the ship gently moving through the sea and the ocean breezes. I just love it. I'm not as much interested anymore in the going to the shows or any of that, because I've done that. I was a performer. I mean, I saw it from a whole different perspective.
Right.
And so now when I go on a cruise, I go and I sit in a deck chair. I read a book. I actually read a book. I just enjoy it. I enjoy being at sea. And yeah, I plug in to some of the activities. I particularly like, you know, of course, dinner. Because the food is so ridiculously good on the ships.
Right.
So when I go on a cruise, the diet's off.
Okay.
But that's really a passion of mine. I enjoy that. In fact, you know, as a Christian, I've even developed a particular niche, even within the cruise industry, called a cruise with a purpose, where
mm-hmm.
we bring a group of believers on a cruise, and then we do outreach in the ports.
Mm.
And nobody else does it. And basically, I was the one that pioneered it, and we've done a number of them now, and they've been very successful.
Mm.
And the people that go on these cruises with a purpose, they go and they come back with something so much more than a good tan and nice pictures. Some people, I've seen some people literally transform from the inside out because they saw ministry firsthand that they've never experienced before in a third world country. And there's really something to be said about that.
You mean handing out some food or water or sharing, or what are we talking about?
Just basically the last trip that we did, we went to the Mexican Riviera, and we fed about 400 people in a really, really, really poor area. People
wow.
literally living along the railroad tracks in shanties that they
mm-hmm.
just threw together, like with cardboard boxes and whatever. I kid you not. I mean, they lived that horribly in Mazatlan
mm-hmm.
and in some areas. And we went there. We set up a couple of trucks, and we fed them hamburgers, and we gave the kids a puppet show. And then we had hundreds and hundreds of gift bags that we just gave to them. And we even had an evangelist from our church come, and
mm-hmm.
he gave a short 10-minute gospel message.
Mm-hmm.
And the bottom line is we gave them cards directing them to do follow-up, basically, but directing them to a local church that was in that
mm-hmm.
area.
Yeah.
And so we saw – so our people physically got down and gave, you know, handed a kid that really needed – that really was hungry, handed him a big plate of food.
Yeah.
Or we prayed with people. We prayed with people that wanted salvation. We prayed with people that had very desperate needs. And
mm-hmm.
And we didn't, you know, there's a language barrier. And, you know, they speak Spanish, and many of our people didn't speak Spanish. But there was still a way to plug in. And there was still a way to bless them. And when you bless somebody in a country like that, you know what happens? When you see their face, when you see their heart, and it shines back at you, you get blessed more than they do.
Right.
And that happens again and again and again. I've seen it time and time again, where when you go and you reach out a loving, caring hand, and you basically are holding a you're basically showing them what Jesus is like and what
right.
Jesus wanted,
right.
Or what Jesus is like, basically. Because he was somebody who loved everybody. And you showing people love, they don't get that. They don't understand that. And it's
yeah.
a new experience for many of these people. And so when you're a church person your whole life and you go to a third world country and you do this and you experience this love that you can develop between somebody from another country, something really dynamic happens. And
mm-hmm.
we've actually seen people go into full-time ministry because of one of our trips.
Mm-hmm.
We even have I know of several people that became missionaries because they were touched by what they saw, and God spoke to them during that trip, and it was confirmed that they should go into missions. Not that everybody will happen to everybody.
Sure.
But that is what really is rewarding about what I do. I love putting people, you know, bringing people on a cruise. It's a wonderful experience. But then you go from this palatial luxury cruise ship and you step down and you go to these, you know, into Mexico, for example, to people who really have desperate needs and live literally day by day.
Mm-hmm.
And you're helping them out. You're helping them. You're giving something that you're giving of yourself. And something happens to you when that happens, when you do that. And they go back to the ship kind of awestruck. And they go back to the ship thinking, wow, I have so much and they have so little. Who am I? You know, and they soul search. And it's a very rewarding experience for a lot of people. And so that's one of the things that's really close to my heart is the cruise industry, but particularly finding a niche within the cruise industry where I can express my faith, and that is through the cruises with a purpose.
Yeah.
And I really enjoy that. I mean, because you know, with that type of business, I'm able to touch people that I don't even know. I mean, I'm able to have an impact, make an impact. And I think that's what God wants us to do when we're here on Earth. As Christians, we are here to make an impact, however small it is, to make an impact. Just do something that will move someone closer to God. And I think that's the key. And if more people, if more believers kind of get out of their shell, get out, you know, and actually reach out outside of their comfort zone a little bit, they'll have unique experiences like that.
Yep. And not to belittle what we're talking about right now, but this is an adventure that you let other people experience that changes them too.
Yes.
This is another adventure, but it's God's adventure that you're involved in, and then you want other people to be involved in.
Well, I love adventure, and I always have. I love the Indiana Jones movies. And there's a new one coming out. That's filming as we speak. And I am so looking forward to that. But you know what? Going on a cruise can be an adventure. But you got to know where it is and know how to find it. And I know how to find it. And I know how to give, you know, help people have an adventure during their cruise.
Yeah.
And so that's the difference between going on a cruise through me and going on a cruise through ABC Travel, basically.
Barry, what a great time it's been with you. Okay, what a perfect chat we've had. And you know, the one thing I want to say before we go is Barry's website is barrysadventures.com. And I'll put a link in the show notes to his website. Go check it out, and you know, maybe take a cruise. Maybe take a cruise for the first time.
Sure.
It's been great talking to you. Okay, Barry.
Jeff, I really enjoyed it too. I mean, I this is one thing that I just feel like we've been having a conversation just between the two of us. I suppose there are people listening in, but I've always enjoyed staying in touch and keeping in touch with my old friends from college and even from high school. And this is what I end up doing is chit-chatting on the phone like this. And that's what kind of like what I felt we've done. But we have an audience,
that's
which
true.
Is even more fun.
That is true. And we'll end it here. And I just want to thank everyone who is on the line listening. And we will also make this available to be downloaded and enjoyed by many more people. So, Barry Vondran, I want to thank you for taking your time to being on the show tonight. And it's been a lot of fun and some touching times and a lot of fun. So I just want to thank you again, Barry.
Well, it was my pleasure. Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Okay. You take care, and please, everybody, join us again for future Roni's Own Radio shows. See you later. Bye-bye.